This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. I use it with my patients at the Hoffman Center all the time. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company is offering you special savings of $50 and free shipping. To find out more, go to TryZonaNow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to focus on a specific nutrient. Well, it's not really a nutrient. It is a nutraceutical that has attracted a lot of attention, and we're inviting back for a reprieve an expert researcher who has focused much of his research on the extraordinary properties of this nutraceutical. He's Dr. A.J. Goel. The nutraceutical is curcumin. And Dr. Goel has written a book entitled Nature's Answer to Cancer and Other Chronic Diseases. And he is a professor and, this is a mouthful, director of the Center for Gastrointestinal Research and Center for Epigenetics, Cancer Prevention, and Cancer Genomics at the Baylor Research Institute, Baylor University Medical Center in Dallas, Texas. For over 20 years, he's been researching cancer. He's been the lead author or contributor to more than 200 peer-reviewed scientific articles. And he is looking into various aspects of cancer prevention and treatment with particular focus on complementary and integrative botanical products. Of interest to him are curcumin from turmeric and boswellia from frankincense. And so without further ado, here's Dr. Goel. It's a pleasure having you back on Intelligent Medicine.
Thanks for having me on the show. It's a pleasure.
Okay, so in your book, you actually start with some observations on our war on cancer. And you're right there in the belly of the beast. I think Baylor is one of the top cancer centers in the country down there in Dallas. It's a place that people flock to specifically for cancer therapy, but you actually contend that in some ways we're losing the war on cancer. Explain that.
Yes. So when I talk about war on cancer, so what I'm trying to say is that, I mean, you know, we have recognized the problem of cancer from long times. It's been now 50, 60 years where we have made concerted effort in terms of tackling cancer. And I wouldn't say that we have not made progress. We have made tremendous progress in terms of understanding the biology of cancer, how cancers evolve. So we know a lot more about cancers in general. We understand how they develop and how to help patients. But when it comes to really looking at the overall numbers, where we were 50 years ago versus where we are now, I think not too much has changed. And the reasons are twofold. So although we have gotten better at diagnosing patients with cancer, we can find cancers relatively early on. We have developed some drugs and so forth. But all the gains we have made in terms of understanding cancer biology or cancer, how to manage it, we are also offsetting some of those gains by not recognizing that our overall incidence of cancers is in general going up. So whatever gains we are making in terms of cancer medicine, we are losing that war still because we are making some unknowingly foolish choices or not being aware that we are not paying attention to our diets and lifestyles. So the overall gains we are making are really, we don't see the gains because overall number of people still dying with cancer is still the same. You will hear all the time people in your neighborhood, in your family, people getting more and more cancer. So I think there is an epidemic of cancer which we need to recognize, and we need to make very simple, subtle choices which can help us all. So overall, the war on cancer, yes, there's a lot of interest, there's a lot of work has been done, but still, we need to think, we need to take a step back and think why we are not winning this war, why we are continuing to struggle with the overall cancer burden? And I think the answers are very simple: diets, lifestyles.
Right. So, and you contrast the mode of action of many of the new innovative cancer drugs, breakthrough drugs, that are extremely expensive. I think you cite the example of one drug that cost $144,000 for a course of treatment, and it may only extend life for 3 months. It's not a cure, but it might, you know, knock the cancer back and allow the patient to survive on average three months, versus the approach using nutraceuticals like curcumin, which don't have a laser-like mode of action working on just one, blocking one chemical pathway or one molecular pathway, but have a multiplicity of actions in cancer.
Absolutely. I think that's a very, very important point, and I think this is something we all need to recognize. You know, the reason, when I told you, we have done a lot in terms of understanding cancer biology, and that's fantastic. But when it comes to developing anti-cancer drugs or cancer therapeutics, really the drugs we even have now versus what we had 40 years ago, they're not that much better, although we would like to see them getting better, but we really have not made that big a difference. And there are multiple reasons, one of the reasons being that cancer is a disease, it's a chronic illness, which is a very complex disease. It takes decades and decades for the cancer to evolve. And when you look at a cancer cell, you know, from a genomic perspective, we have about 20,000 genes in our body. Some of these genes go, they are dysregulated or they're not functioning right, and that, which allows cancers to grow. So when we think of the drugs, most of the pharmaceutical-based drugs we are using, they are designed against a specific gene or a specific pathway. So which is good and fine for simple things or diseases where there's only one single gene or one single molecular pathway is involved. But when it comes to cancers, it's never a disease of a one gene or one pathway, and that is one of the most important reasons why we have not made as much progress in terms of developing cancer therapeutics, because we are missing the point here. Because we will probably never be as successful in treating cancers if you're going to develop drugs, single drug, single target, single gene, single pathway. It is never going to work, and that's why we have not made the difference. And when we develop these drugs, they're notoriously toxic, and we all know that all the cancer, chemotherapy, and so forth, they're notoriously toxic, because what happens is when you take these drugs go and bind to those pathways or cells or genes, and then they block that, but then that pathway becomes inactive, and other pathways have to compensate for their function, and that's where the toxicity comes in. So, absolutely, in order to be more effective in terms of treating cancers, we have to look at drugs or ways or means or approaches which can hit, which can target multiple pathways, multiple mechanisms, multiple biological pathways. And that's the only way to more effectively treat cancer patients, and that's what we have not done so far.
And so how is it that curcumin hits these multiple pathways? Can you enumerate some of the ways in which curcumin prevents or may even retard active cancer?
Absolutely. So now how curcumin hits many, many pathways, we don't fully understand, and that's a process we're still trying to understand. But what we know is that curcumin has hundreds and hundreds of different genes and many, many different pathways which are involved in fighting inflammation, fighting cancer, fighting diabetes, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's. And that is why we have seen so much interest in curcumin, not just from a cancer perspective, but so many different diseases, because when we break down the things, it all boils down to different genes, different pathways, and since curcumin can target so many different pathways, it is so much effective in a variety of diseases, and that's what we need to see. We need to have more compounds, more such drugs or nutraceuticals which can target multiple pathways, so that we have much more efficacious ways of controlling disease and preventing disease.
There, you mention in the book that curcumin has been studied and found effective for the following types of cancer, and you enumerate a whole list. Can you tell us about what some of the research has shown? And you know, I think the ultimate question is, can you just pop, you know, curcumin supplements, and is that a cure for cancer, or are we just talking about adjunctive treatment?
Yes, I think that's a very important question. So in terms of cancers and curcumin, to the best of my knowledge, virtually there is no human cancer for which curcumin has not been studied. So there's tons and tons of data. There are hundreds and hundreds of articles on curcumin and virtually every type of human cancer you can think of. So there's a lot of evidence out there, and it's not surprising because, like I said before, curcumin works on so many different genes and pathways, and a lot of these pathways are involved in promoting cancer growth. And if you take curcumin, it blocks that activity, it blocks those pathways. You would expect that the cancer cells are not able to grow. And there's a lot of overlap between different cancers because there's similar sort of genes, or similar pathways are involved. So it is very, very effective in terms of controlling cancer and many other diseases. Now, when it comes to does it work best in a preventative setting or it works in a therapeutic setting? And in that regard, I would think, and there's a lot of data to say that probably, just like you said before, pharmaceutical drugs, they have a laser-like focus. You take them, they go, and they can kill cancer cells very rapidly, but at the same time, they kill a lot of normal cells around those tumor cells, and that's where the toxicity comes in also from. So when you look at compounds like curcumin, I think they work best in a preventative setting, for sure. You have to take these compounds for long periods of time because they're diet-based compounds. You take them, you look at certain diets, especially South Asian diets, like in India, people consume turmeric for their entire lifetime. So they're taking these compounds every single day. And if you look at the overall disease burden in India versus the Western world countries, it's much, much lower in terms of cancer and many other diseases. So yes, I think curcumin works probably best in a preventative setting. But now in the last 10 to 20 years, there's a lot of new data where, including a lot of the work our group has done, shown that it can also work very effectively as an adjunct to chemotherapy, which is fantastic because a lot mm-hmm. of people, a lot of patients call me, a lot of people call me that, already have cancer, I'm already taking chemotherapy, can I use it along with my chemotherapy? The answer is absolutely yes. We have shown a lot of data that if you take it with chemotherapy, actually it makes your chemotherapy look better because it works in the most instances, at least what we have seen, it works synergistically, it mm-hmm. helps improve the therapeutic effects of your chemotherapy, while at the same time it minimizes the toxicity from such drugs and improves the overall quality of these patients who are already taking chemotherapy. So yes, I think it works best in a preventative setting, but there's a lot of new evidence out there that used as an adjunct to chemotherapy is a very, very effective means as well.
Yeah, and so how do we overcome the resistance of many conventional doctors, in particular oncologists, who may say, hey, don't take any of those things because they might interfere with chemo or radiation. I mean, the classic argument is these things may have antioxidant effects. We actually want oxidizing effects with radiation, certain forms of chemo. So let's just blast away without any protection whatsoever from antioxidant compounds.
That's right. I mean, I think this is a struggle, we are all going through in terms of how can we convince our oncology colleagues to begin considering the use of such compounds in a more serious fashion. And I can tell you that it's a process. It's not going to happen overnight. It's a educational process where we all have to share the burden of, just like we are doing here. So I'm sharing my research with you and the listeners who are listening to this show, so they'll be understanding this. So there's a lot of evidence now that when it comes to curcumin, it is actually extremely safe. I've yet to find a conventional chemotherapy where curcumin is cautioned against the use. So for most of the classical chemotherapies, there's tons and tons of data that when combined with chemotherapy, really there's no concern for any added toxicity or anything. So it is actually shown that in most instances, at least most of the data I'm aware of, it works beautifully. It really helps patients. And in addition, I told you, I get about 10 to 20 calls, emails from people all day long, those who tell me that, they have been trying curcumin along with their chemotherapy, and actually they're feeling so much better than when they were using chemotherapy alone. So yes, I mean, and if you look at the scientific evidence, if you look at PubMed, look for the word curcumin, look for your preferred chemotherapy, and you will see that somebody have published many, many studies. There are a lot of studies out there that curcumin in conjunction with radiotherapy, chemotherapy, actually most instances, I would say probably all the studies at least I've seen, and I follow this literature very, very careful on a regular basis, there's really no concern for not taking curcumin in these situations.
Mm-hmm. Is this a practical therapy for people with cancer? What I mean is sometimes research reveals that astronomical quantities of a certain substance can be beneficial. Mm-hmm. And then next thing you know, you find the substance in a pill or a liquid in a health food store. But the amount mm-hmm. is not comparable to what was found to be efficacious under experimental conditions. So is there a dosage
right.
Threshold where, you know, you may or may not get benefit?
Absolutely. So I think that's a very important question, and I think that's true for any drug, any compound. And I think when I'm saying that there's evidence out there that curcumin used as an adjunct along with chemotherapy is beneficial. So what I'm telling you is a lot of the data from preclinical studies, as well as a lot of human studies. If you look at the studies on clinicaltrials.gov, which is a government website which shows all the human clinical trials undergoing on patients with different diseases, you can see that there are lots of human studies where curcumin is being used as an adjunctive treatment in cancer patients. When it comes to dosing, yes, I mean, one of the limitations of curcumin is poorly absorbed
right.
By our bodies, and depending upon what organ or what disease we are talking about, it can be beneficial or less beneficial. So, for example, I work on colon cancer a lot. So in colon cancer, actually, curcumin has shown tremendous promise because since it's not poor, very well absorbed, it stays in the colon for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, you have both local effect on the colon as well as whatever amount gets absorbed in your bloodstream. So you have double effect. And in colon cancer trials, it's shown tremendous promise.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that,
I imagine a bladder cancer perhaps as well, because that it might concentrate in the urine.
Sure, absolutely. But also, I would tell you that in last many years, there are many different approaches people have used, different manufacturers, different vendors have used to enhance the absorption of curcumin in our bodies by using different strategies, you know, using some sort of lipids and fats which can enhance the absorption of curcumin, which really has changed the ground rules for the game, because this is now these newer forms of curcumin are really much better absorbed and they're a lot more efficacious. If you look at some of the older literature, people have used 3-4 grams of curcumin every day for most clinical trials. But I can tell you, we have done a lot of studies in the last few years, human trials, and I think a dose of about anywhere between 1 to 2 grams of a high absorption curcumin mm-hmm. is probably plenty enough for the most clinical trials we have done or we are doing.
So that translates to, for our listeners, that translates to anywhere from, you know, if it's a big pill, 2 pills to, if it's a smaller pill, 4 pills per day.
That's about, so 2 to 4 pills a day, if you're trying to use it for any therapeutic benefit, it's really not that much. Yes, mm-hmm. I mean, I understand if you have to take 50 pills, we are talking very different thing. But no, in this case, you can easily find pills of 500 to 700 milligrams curcumin from different sources. And we are only talking 3 to 4 pills a day, mm-hmm. which is very, very doable, which is very practical.
So this is a step beyond turmeric, the ordinary kitchen spice, because you then extract from it the curcumin, and then you amp up the curcumin bioavailability through various techniques, either microencapsulating it in a lipid, you know, biosphere, you know, like a little microsphere,
sure.
or mixing it with some sort of fat-soluble vehicle to get it into the bloodstream.
That's correct. So I think as far as the curcumin extraction process goes, I think that's pretty standard. You ground up the spiced turmeric, you extract curcumin, but then you use many different approaches. You can micronize it, you can coat it with different phytosomes or lipids, because this goes back to the old traditional principles of consuming turmeric. So if you look at historically or traditionally, turmeric was used in India based on the old Ayurvedic principles of consumption of turmeric. So you would always take turmeric with a glass full of full fat lipid. Typically that was a very standard ways of using it, but at that time most people did not recognize that why are we always using turmeric with full fat milk.
Yeah, like, a golden milk kind of drink.
Golden milk, exactly. Right. So yeah. you take a glass full of milk and you stir in a spoonful of turmeric and you swallow it down. So we didn't realize, I mean, nobody realized why we were doing it, but we knew that this process always works. And now people have come down to the conclusion that the reason it always worked was because when you ingest turmeric with fatty milk, it basically, the fat coats the curcumin molecules and it allows it to enhance absorption. So a lot of these vendors are now using different approaches of enhancing curcumin bioavailability or bioabsorption by coating them with different sorts of fatty molecules.
Mm-hmm. All right. You've really set the stage for a discussion of some of the other attributes of curcumin. We've talked about curcumin in relationship to cancer. When we return, our listeners know that we divide these podcasts into two parts. When we return, more on the subject of curcumin with today's guests. He's Dr. A.J. Goel. It's spelled G-O-E-L. He's a researcher at Baylor University Medical School. And his book is Curcumin, Nature's Answer to Cancer and Other Chronic Diseases. And we'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.